Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. And it's another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Van Hart. We got Brian Myers. And
it was a rough day for the Hawks, wasn't it?
Yes, I try not to be too depressed, but, you know, hey, they got
in the Rose Bowl. I saw that look on your face, and I knew exactly where you were going.
They got in the Rose Bowl, so I could smile about that. So.
No, I tell you what, they had a great season. You know, I watched that game, and two things occurred to me. The first is that freak interception.
Right.
And you kind of knew at the time that that one may come back and haunt you, and it obviously
right.
It did.
That was amazing how that got deflected, and the guy was laying on his back. If you didn't see the game, he was laying on his back, and the ball just
landed
on him.
His chest.
And he,
yeah.
You know, got it, of course, interception. So, otherwise,
that would have been
the Hawkeyes could have, well, or they would have had another shot, or
well,
at least
right,
a field
but, I mean,
goal.
If he catches that ball, obviously,
it's definitely a different ball game. And then, hats off to Michigan State's freshman running back. I can't remember his name, but he was a beast in the fourth quarter.
Well, he was. And the thing that struck me about that was it wasn't so much that they scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter. It was that they used up almost the whole fourth quarter doing
right,
it. That's
right.
What absolutely.
It was a good drive. It was well coached and very athletic team. And the Hawkeyes, you know, they stuck it in there with them. And the defense played very, very well. I wish the offense wasn't completely on all four cylinders most of the game.
Michigan State's defense
was pretty tough. So I'm not going
to
take anything away from them. It was a good game. Spartans deserved to win. They were the better team. And go Spartans into the championship. I'd like to see the Big Ten win.
But the Hawks are a great team. I think they proved that.
Right.
They're going to the Rose Bowl. Wish them the best
and
of success
I hope
there.
They absolutely destroy Stanford. That would be nice.
That would be great.
That would be a great New Year's Day gift. So we have a very special guest on the line, U.S. Senator Rand Paul, who is running for president as a Republican, has joined us on our line. Welcome, Senator Paul.
Glad to be with you guys.
So I have a question I ask every candidate, whether they're running for state senator or they're running for president. Why are you running? Why would you want to do this to yourself?
Well, you know, a few years back, I got worried that we were really going off the deep end. You know, we borrow about $1 million a minute. And I really think that there aren't many people in Washington, Republican or Democrat, who are willing to actually cut the spending necessary to balance even one year's budget. And I think that the foundation of the country actually is potentially damaged by having so much debt. You know, we have like a $19 trillion debt now, and that equals our entire annual economy. And many economists say that it causes us to lose 1 million jobs a year, but I think it also could cause us to destroy the currency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there needs to be a voice for reason and sanity. And so I got up off my couch, quit throwing things at my TV, and said, I'm going to run for office.
Well, good for you. And so far, you know, the Iowa caucus is coming up here in February, and it's what are you hearing on the ground here in Iowa? Things going
you know,
well for you?
We've got a great ground game. We have two former state GOP chairmen that are leading our effort, and we have a great ground game, a lot of young people involved in the campaign. We're organized on all 20 college campuses. And one interesting factoid, there's 120,000 college students in Iowa, and that's about how many people turn up in the caucuses. And nobody's supposing we can get all of them to vote, but we have a goal of getting 10,000 college students out, and for that to be a significant portion of our vote, And most of the polling shows that we're more popular with the younger voters, mm-hmm. and also that the younger voters are underrepresented in the polling, and so that may explain why we're not doing as well as we'd like to be in the polling.
Certainly, I think polls have been kind of all over the place, and I think people are putting too much stock in them. I mean, the first poll that really counts will be, you know, February 1, so we'll see how that goes. I've been to a couple of your college events, and you get some good crowds out. What's resonating with these young voters with when it comes to your message?
Well, I think young people, you know, it's their first chance to be away from home. They're becoming adults. They're making their own decisions. They're not under their parents' jurisdiction all the time, and they kind of want to be left alone. And so many young people, their day-to-day communications revolve through their phone. I mean, we have teenage kids sometimes in our basement, and we communicate them by text message, even in the house, and I don't think we're alone. But I think kids, because so much of their communication goes through their phone, they're sympathetic to my argument that the government shouldn't have access to all of your phone records, you know, without a warrant or without suspicion that you've done something wrong. And so I think on college campuses, my stand and my filibuster against the NSA has been something that has helped us to get a good traction with college kids.
Senator Paul, I remember last May, I've forgotten what event it was, but I heard you speak there, and I heard Lindsey Graham, excuse me, speak there as well. And one of the things that he said that just absolutely struck me was, and I think he said this kind of in response to your remarks, but he said, if I'm president of the United States and you're thinking about joining Al-Qaeda or ISIL, I'm not going to call a judge. I'm going to call a drone, and we will kill you. Now, the thing that struck me about that was he wasn't talking about, you know, somebody off in a cave in Afghanistan. He was talking about United States citizens there.
Well, and he says the battleground's everywhere, and so he says when someone accuses you of being a terrorist, that if you ask for a lawyer, you should tell them to shut up. The problem is that we've developed criteria for people we're supposed to be suspicious of in this country, American citizens, mm-hmm. that involves things like likes to pay in cash, has multiple guns at their house, you know, has changed the color of their hair, absurd things, missing fingers on their hand.
Well, that's a sinister thing. I happen to be all of those. I really am missing a part of my finger.
Yeah. And so the thing is that if that's sort of people we think are suspicious, wouldn't you want your day in court? Wouldn't you want a lawyer? You know, and it's different than the battlefield. You know, if you join the Syrian terrorists and you're over there fighting, you will be killed in the battlefield. I think everybody acknowledges that. But what we're talking about is that people like Lindsey Graham, who have such a low regard for freedom, that they would give up their liberty for sort of a false sense of security. That's a danger to our country, and I think it deserves to be stood up against. And that's part of what I'm doing, is making sure that people know that there is someone who will stand up for the Bill of Rights.
Now, as far as balancing security versus liberty, we got some people, you know, after the San Bernardino shooting who are saying, hey, we need to exercise more gun control. You disagree?
Yeah, and in fact, California, you know, has the most strict gun control. Almost every left-wing gun control legislation that the Democrats want on the national level, California's already passed it, and yet people were still able to get these guns. And I guess a good way to put it in perspective is that if you're going to commit a suicide attack, do you really care that you might have broken a gun control law? And
very true.
Really, even with all the laws, I'm not sure they broke any laws with these. Now, a couple of the guns were transferred, you know, mm-hmm. from friends, but most of the guns, I believe, were purchased actually legally. But it's illegal to make bombs and explosives, but suicide bombers just don't care too much about laws. But, you know, I'm in D.C. a lot of the time voting in Congress, and it's virtually impossible to get a gun in D.C. for self-defense. And so I obey the laws because I'm law-abiding, but do you think mm-hmm. the criminals that roam the streets in D.C., do you think they're thinking, oh, my goodness, there's a gun control law. I probably shouldn't be carrying this gun.
Yeah, or there's, oh, I can't go in here. It's a gun-free zone.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the one thing that San Bernardino did point out, though, is that I think we do have to have more scrutiny of people who come to our country. Think about it. From 9/11 on, almost every one of these terrorist attacks that we've suffered have been from people who legally migrated and immigrated to our country. 19 hijackers came.
Mm-hmm.
16 out of the 19 were from Saudi Arabia, but they used our visa system. They just signed up and came. In fact, two of the hijackers were on the CIA watch list, and they lived with an FBI informant for a year, and we did nothing about it. So it was just terrible, terrible letdown in investigation and police work on 9/11. But the bottom line is they came in here through our immigration system. The most recent woman in San Bernardino, she came also on a fiancé visa. For goodness sakes, we need more scrutiny. So I've asked for a pause in immigration from about 34 countries, and during that pause, the government needs to study whether or not we know who's here and whether the people here are obeying the rules. One reason I think probably people are not obeying the rules is there's 11 million people in our country illegally, and 40% of them have overstayed their visa. We don't seem to be doing anything about it. We don't seem to enforce our current laws. And so if we're not doing it for all of the illegal immigrants, what about the 150,000 students who come from the Middle East each year? Do we know where they are? Do we know they're obeying our rules? And I think that's not too much to ask, is that we actually have an immigration system that knows who's coming into our country.
Right. Now, unlike what one of your opponents just recommended this week, your pause is based on country of origin, not on faith, correct?
Yeah, we don't base it on religion. I don't think there should be a religious test, but I think we should base it on areas where there is a significant degree of anti-Americanism, terrorism, and people who we think are a danger to us. So we have North Korea on the list. We also have Nigeria on the list, which is sort of 50-50 Christian and Islamic. But I think it's also a mistake. While I don't want a religious test, I think it's a mistake not to acknowledge that the people who have attacked us have not been radicalized Christians.
Right.
They have been radical Islam. And if we can't name the enemy, I don't think we can ever defeat the enemy. But I think it's silly to spend hundreds of billions of dollars taking the war over there and then just say, oh, well, but you can come over here anytime you want.
Right. So kind of pivot a little bit, since we're on the topic of radical Islamic terrorism, how do we defeat ISIS? I know your view is slightly different than the rest of the field.
Well, you know, I have been for supporting the efforts through air power, arming the Kurds, and I would arm the Kurds directly, not through the Baghdad government. But I have said over and over again that the long-lasting victory, the long-lasting peace, will only come when Sunni Islam rises up and says, this is not our religion, this does not represent us, and when they are the boots on the ground. The reason I say that is militarily we have the ability. If we put a 500,000 troops in, it'll take us 6 months, we'll take back every Sunni city. But the Sunni Muslims who live there are of the same religion, sort of the Sunni ISIS group that's come in. They need to reject it, and they need to be the ones who are fighting, because if they don't fight, it's always pointed as, these are Americans, these are infidels, this is another Christian crusade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even when we wipe out ISIS, they say it's like mowing the grass. You know, there'll be 10,000 more that spring up as a reaction to our eliminating them. So they have to see their fellow countrymen stamping them out, and their fellow countrymen, frankly, need to say this is not what represents Islam.
Right, and yeah, reform needs to come within. I heard a stat, even if 1% Muslims are radicalized, we're talking like, you know, 10 million people.
That's,
I mean, it's
exactly
a huge
right.
number.
People have used the term 5%, and 5% would be 50 million. And when you look at statistics of people who have said violence is okay, unfortunately, even in Western countries, in European countries, sometimes it's more than 5%. Sometimes 10, 15, and 20%.
That's right.
Of people of the Islamic faith saying that jihad is fine and that killing civilians in the name of jihad is fine. And that is worrisome, because we have had such an open policy to people to come here. I just don't understand how they could believe that, you know, violence is a good idea, because what we have in our country is an amazing thing. While I'm a Christian, I have no problem with people practicing the other faith. I do believe that we separate our religion from our government and allow everybody to practice their own faith. But we do have to not blind ourselves and say, well, just anybody can come anytime.
Well, the difficulty that we've got in this regard is that we have an awful lot of Muslims out there, of course, that are personally not interested in jihad, but they may be ambivalent at best with respect to those who do.
Yeah, and I think the voices need to be louder. And I know sometimes people say, oh, I shouldn't be saying this. But, you know, they're not going to accept a Christian telling them this. It needs to be a Muslim voice. So we need thousands and thousands of people who are mainstream, civilized Muslims to come forward and say, this is not our religion, and we shouldn't be answering a call to go fight for ISIS. Instead, there are the opposite call from every peace-loving Muslim around the world to say, we have to stamp this out because it's destroying the reputation of our religion.
Great. We have 2 minutes left. You're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have U.S. Senator Rand Paul. Senator Paul, just shifting gears, the brief time we have left, there was a vote on this week on the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. You voted no. Explain to our listeners why you voted no, please.
You know, I've never been a believer the federal government ought to be involved in education. You know, I was a kid in 1976 when we went to the Republican convention, and my family supported Reagan. In 1980, when Reagan won, it became the party platform that we were for repeal of the Department of Education. Unfortunately, this bill reauthorizes the Department of Education. Now, it did do some good things. No Child Left Behind increased the Department of Education, increased federal control. They have dialed it back some, and so I'm not necessarily objecting to some of the reforms in the bill, but I don't like Common Core coming to the federal government. I don't like Department of Education. And I really frankly would save that money and send that money back to the people. And I think curriculum and what we learn in school ought to be decided by local school board, local teachers, and parents.
Great. So block grant Title I money, for instance, back to the states.
Yeah, and I would also even allow some voucher programs.
This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. Caffeinate Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance you need. Well, we don't have another interview lined up this segment. We thought we would actually talk a little bit about the GOP 2016 race because it's not something that we've touched on a lot. You know, we did have candidate next last segment, so the kind of a Senator Paul was a good introduction into this topic. I think he brought up some good points about polling that we all need to keep in mind. That we don't know exactly how all of these polls are weighted. That makes a difference. Also, keep in mind that with polling, a lot of folks are not answering landlines anymore, and pollsters are having to change tactics, and it's impacting their results. And I think we've all noticed that polling in a couple cases recently has been way off.
Well, after what you did here a couple of years ago, when you became the Charlie Cook of Iowa politics, you know what?
It's kind of easy when you have
whatever you say about polling. I'll listen.
It's kind of easy when you have a determined pool to get your answers. I mean, you know, when you're actually polling the people you know are going to be voting.
Well, look, that may well be true, but I didn't hear anybody else predict it, and you did.
Yeah, I'm just reporting what the what people were telling me. Wasn't, you know, it surprised me. But the way, anyway, we could go on, and that's ancient history. But yeah, it polling, first of all, I want to say, if you're putting all your eggs in the polling basket and you're basing your choice on electability alone, I'm not saying electability shouldn't be something that, that you're concerned about. But if that's that, if that's your primary argument, I think you could, you're, you could be set up for disappointment. Because, you know, I'm not going to predict that this year that, you know, say Mike Huckabee or Rick Santorum is going to suddenly shoot to the top and be the front runner in Iowa.
Right.
Because I'm not sure this isn't the same. This isn't the same field. This isn't the same circumstances as 2012. What we saw actually in 2011 leading up to 2012 Iowa caucus. But front runners rise, front runners do go down. I think what we are seeing is a definite, you have definitely a top tier and a secondary tier, and the top tier would include Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Ben Carson, even though I think Ben Carson is on his way down.
Yeah, I think he has maybe this time self-destructed enough,
right,
that it's hurt him.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the ability to recover from some of this stuff that Trump has.
Right. So taking a look at polling, Reuters just released a poll. Was that yesterday? Or that'd be a Tuesday? We're recording on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it was Tuesday.
So, okay. So basically they have Trump at 35%, Rubio at 15.3%, Carson at 12.3%, and Cruz at 10.2%. And this is a national poll. And I'll say about this poll, as I say about any national poll, it's absolutely meaningless. Absolutely meaningless.
I don't know that I'd call it meaningless.
No, meaningless. Meaningless.
Because it may be a step ahead of meaningless. May only be one step ahead, but
perhaps. But it's if you're going to look at polling, look at early state polling. I think that's much more predictive of how the race is going to end up going, because momentum builds as candidates, you know, win states and as they do well in early states. Mm-hmm. So you could be polling. I don't care if you're polling at the top nationally on January 30th, but yet you come in sixth place in Iowa, you know,
it isn't going to matter.
It's not going to matter. Or if you lose the first two contests, you know, you're pretty much done for. This, I say that with this caveat, 2016 has the potential to totally blow away any previous model that we've had in terms of turnout, in terms of just how these things tend to go. Because typically, conventional wisdom goes like this. If somebody wins Iowa, somebody, and then a different person wins New Hampshire, South Carolina usually picks the winner. Except 2012, that didn't happen. Florida picked the winner at that time because South Carolina went rogue and picked a third different candidate. Here's the thing. We could literally have a different winner for the first four contests, first five contests. It's totally possible. Or
I don't see it, buddy.
Or, well, Donald Trump right now seems to be a runaway train. But here's the thing: 538 late last month had a pretty good article about how really Trump support and all candidate support is still pretty soft. And a lot of people aren't yet paying attention. Usually people don't pay attention. They're, unlike us who pay attention to this thing months in advance, a lot of your typical voters don't really pay that much attention until a month before.
Well, look, there's no question that we're still a month and a half out, a little bit more than that. Anyway, that's an eternity.
It is.
I grant that. In politics, so many things that, you know, can come along and derail a campaign or
right.
somebody implodes or whatever. A lot of things can happen. I get that. But the trending with the Donald, you see that in this Reuters poll.
Right.
And I think I was listening to Charlie Rose last night, and he had had John Heilemann and Mark, I can't remember his name.
Marco Shoot?
No.
Well, that's his name now.
Marco anyway, he was talking to a couple of guys on there about Trump.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because these guys both believe Trump is the likely GOP winner. And they say that it has the establishment panicked to the point that they think it's at least possible that at convention they're gonna draft, get this, Mitt Romney.
Romney, he sucks.
Oh man.
Yes. Yes.
How are they going to explain? I mean, here's the thing. You can draft Mitt Romney all you want, but if Trump has the delegates locked up, and a lot of these states by law, these delegates are bound to the winner of their primary, how are they going to change things?
I don't know how this works. I'm not smart enough
You can only accomplish this if one candidate doesn't win enough delegates. Then you have a brokered convention, and that's where something like that can happen.
Talk to Heilemann, and man, why can't I remember Mark's last name?
I don't know.
You know him. Shoot.
Okay. Personally?
I don't know if you've met him or not. I've met him a couple of times.
Okay. What outlet is he with again? Not that matters, but...
He's a regular on Morning Joe.
Oh,
I'm having a mental block on his last name.
You assume I watch MSNBC.
If you want to know what's going on the other side, that's a pretty good place to look.
Well, that's true. If you want to know what the enemy's thinking. Right now, and you're probably right. You're probably right about not having a different winner for the first four state contests. I will say I'm not entirely convinced Trump is going to perform as well as his polling. And I think if anybody has the ability, if there's a state that has the ability to slow the Trump train down, it's Iowa. And if we're going to base it off polling, we could look at the polling right now and see that out of the early states, Trump is the most vulnerable here. And it seems like Cruz is... He's trending up. Cruz people are calling him the front runner after, let's see, which poll was that? Oh, the Monmouth University poll came out, having Cruz up 5 points over Trump with 24% to Trump's 19%. Carson was slipped down to fourth place. Rubio was at 17%. Carson had 13%, which I can't remember how many. I think that was a 19-point drop from Monmouth's last.
Yeah, close to free fall.
But then you had a CNN ORC poll that came out the same day that had Trump up 13 points. I will tell you this. I do not believe Donald Trump is up 13 points in Iowa. I think that's an outlier. I don't believe it at all. And here's why. I took a look at both polls, and I saw, for one thing, CNN and ORC weighted their poll based off of census information, gender, age, as well as geographical location. That might be well and good in a general election, but I don't think that cuts it when you're looking at likely caucus goers. One thing that Monmouth did that CNN ORC didn't is they weighted their poll based on of the evangelical vote.
Mm-hmm.
About 50% weighted towards evangelicals, 50% non-evangelicals. And here's why this is important. In the exit polling in 2012 showed 57% of the Republican caucus goers were evangelical or born-again Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a poll that's not taking that into account,
right,
is likely going to be skewed.
No, that makes sense.
Why I think the Monmouth poll is probably closer to on target than the CNN ORC poll. They could end up both being completely wrong. We'll see. But I mean, because really the first poll that counts would be February end. By the way, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and Brian and I are bloviating about the GOP
one
race.
Of us is.
I'm bloviating. I'm going to let Brian get a word in edgewise here.
Well, look, I think what you said there was spot on with respect to taking into your calculus the evangelical vote.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sure that the Donald's support is particularly soft. particularly given that it came out yesterday that, what was it, 68% of those polled that support him now said they would continue to support him if he ran third party. That sounds to me like again, a guy who's locked in pretty tightly with his supporters.
Again, that's nationally.
I understand that.
I haven't seen that poll in their methodology, but
forgive me, but what's troubling me is for several months now I've been sensing a little bit of a sense of inevitability about the Donald. This is not something I'm happy about. I'm just giving you what I'm sensing in that regard.
And we touched about, I want to kind of end this segment just talking about, we discussed a little bit with Senator Paul. We did not mention Trump's name. Mr. Trump has suggested that we ban all Muslims from entering the United States. And that has unleashed a tidal wave of criticism from people who have not necessarily even criticized him before. For instance, Senator Santorum and Cruz didn't necessarily, they didn't condemn him.
Yeah.
But, they did put a stamp of approval. I mean, Senator Santorum even noted this has some constitutional issues. Senator Paul indicated, with a faith test, you have some constitutional issues.
Well, you watch. This will be another one of those moments, and we've seen many of them come and go in the last 6 months. This will be another moment in which everybody will say, this is the end.
Oh.
This is it. This is going to derail the Donald finally.
I'm making no such prediction.
He will double down on this, and he will make a compelling case for why he's right, and pretty soon, this will be yesterday's news, and his poll numbers will remain high. I don't understand the dynamic. I'm just telling you that's what I've seen.
Right. And I'm not going to predict this as some smoking gun. I don't believe for a second that it will be, because here his supporters are pretty much the people who are defending it are people who support him already. There are a few people that are support that are in favor of this, even if they're not supportive, thinking, well, this is the one thing he is right on. There was a lot of confusion even within his campaign, because Hope Hicks, his spokesperson, was asked, would that include even
American citizens? Yeah.
And she said, Mr. Trump said everyone. And then Trump clarified, no, it wouldn't. This wouldn't be American citizens. It also wouldn't be members of our military. But, you know, this is what happens when you misspeak and you're not clear, or perhaps maybe your campaign's thinking, oh, crud. We didn't really think that one through. Anyway, we'll see what happens.
I'm interested in hearing what Dr. Sam has to say about all this.
Right. He's taking a little heat, too, for this.
Yeah.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
And now it's time for our news rundown, otherwise known as News You Can Use. Okay, first up, climate change and the media, otherwise known as bad science and NPR's non-existent objectivity.
I don't think there's any objectivity within the, the media on this subject.
Yeah, when we get through this, we'll just go through it. About 600 scientists and engineers, including former employees of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA, have signed on to letters urging the head of that agency to push back against political interference in science. For months, the head of that agency, Catherine Sullivan, has been tangling with U.S. Representative Lamar Smith, a Texas Republican and chairman of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He's been investigating a climate change study done by NOAA scientists. And we have a clip of NPR's news segment on this particular
The study showed there had been no slowdown or pause in warming over the last couple decades, as researchers had previously thought. The so-called global warming hiatus had been a favorite talking point for conservatives who doubt the scientific consensus on climate change. But NOAA researcher Tom Carl told NPR,
"We think the data no longer supports the notion of having a hiatus."
That got the attention of Lamar Smith. He's a Republican from Texas who chairs the House Science Committee.
I have a couple concerns about the study. One, the timing is very suspicious right before the climate meeting in Paris.
He says whistleblowers have told him the study was rushed into publication. And he says it did not include satellite data.
They left out the gold standard when it comes to determining what the global temperature has been. And by therefore sort of cherry picking their data, it didn't seem to me to be a completely honest study.
And you don't think the normal scientific peer review process that would take place at a high profile journal like Science would flag something like cherry picking data?
No, I don't think that Science magazine had access to a whistleblower like we did, saying it had been rushed and had not been sufficiently peer-reviewed. And, you know, Science magazine may have its own bias. I don't know. Maybe they wanted to rush it out before the Paris summit as well.
Science is published by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. It's the world's largest multidisciplinary science society. Jesse Smith is an editor there. He says satellite data is irrelevant. This study dealt with sea surface temperature measurements from ships and buoys. And he says the review process took longer than normal.
We subjected the paper to even more scrutiny than we subject most papers to.
So if someone's going around saying that your journal is, like, shoddy and missing obvious points and, like, rushing things, I mean, do you take this personally at all?
No, it's misguided and uninformed, so I can't really take it personally.
Misguided?
Well, I'm talking about
uninformed.
Leading questions. And, yes, Science Magazine is just like, it's just the best, man.
It's the coolest of the cool.
Oh, yes.
You know, I think
Lamar Smith, he's just a rube who doesn't know anything.
Exactly. I think it's unfortunate, actually, that Lamar Smith used the phrase cherry-picked, because that's not what they did. They didn't cherry-pick. They ignored. Yeah. They ignored. Yeah. Satellite data is irrelevant?
And, see, here's a question.
That's the whole problem.
Here's a question she should have asked. Why? Why do you consider it irrelevant?
Yeah.
Hello, that's what a journalist should do.
Wouldn't you think?
Right.
But instead, what you do is you wander around making all of these comments that make this particular journal look like it's, you know, Moses handing down the stone tablets or something. Anyway. Okay.
Anyway, peer review doesn't work anymore when peer review just becomes an echo chamber. So.
Well said. Okay. ESEA, reauthorization passes, and that vote actually was just done as we came into the studio to record this morning, which is Wednesday.
Yep.
And do you have the final vote on that?
85-12. 85-12. So just one of the people yesterday who was absent voting for cloture must have come in to vote yes. I haven't seen who voted how. I'm assuming the 12 votes remain the same. U.S. Senators Roy Blunt, Michael Crapo, his name makes me smile. Ted Cruz, Steve Daines, Mike Lee, Jerry Moran,
I think it's Moran.
Moran.
Yep, Moran. Moran.
Maybe my apologies to the senator
for this particular case. Ran. It might be Moron.
Moron. We need more Ron.
More
Rand
Ron.
Paul, James Reich, Ben Sasse, who's the new senator, U.S. senator in Nebraska. Happy to see him vote no on that. Tim Scott, South Carolina. Richard Shelby, and David Vitter. Apparently, U.S. Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio and Bernie Sanders were too busy to come in and vote on cloture on the arguably the biggest education bill they'll probably deal with in their lifetime.
On the other hand, if they knew they were going to that it would be a total waste of time to come back and vote,
I'm thinking if I were Marco Rubio. And I'm trying to win support from those who are anti-Common Core and pro-local control. I'm going to want to come in and make sure my vote's on the record.
Could be, but this is actually the best of both worlds for these guys. I would have voted this way.
Yeah. I don't believe you. Sorry, you didn't come in and vote. I just want to point out, if you're wondering what is wrong with this bill, there's an article on truthinamericaneducation.com. You can scroll down the homepage a little bit and you'll find it. It says top 12 concerns about the Every Student Succeeds Act. That is now the new name for this education and or elementary and secondary education act, which was originally passed in 1965. It's given a new name every time it's reauthorized. It was No Child Left Behind, and now it's since President Obama is probably going to sign it into law, it'll be the Every Student Succeeds Act. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
Where every student probably won't succeed as a result of this bill, and they'll probably do nothing.
A warm fuzzy there.
Yep, very much so.
All right. New emails show that the Department of Defense was ready to respond in the Benghazi attack. Shazam. According to Judicial Watch, they released, released a new Benghazi email from then Department of Defense Chief of Staff Jeremy Bash to State Department leadership, immediately offering, quote, forces that could move to Benghazi, unquote, during the terrorist attack on the U.S. Special Mission Compound in Benghazi, Libya on September 11, 2012. In an email sent to top Department of State officials at 7:19 p.m. Eastern Time, only hours after the attack had begun, Bash says, we have identified the forces that could move to Benghazi. They are spinning up as we speak, unquote. So much for the fog of war. Those guys were ready to go and at least attempt to help our people when they were under attack.
Right.
Now, this raises the question that people have been talking about now for years. Who ordered the stand down? Who said, you're not going? And why?
It's probably in one of those emails she hasn't released yet.
Well, that could be.
I'm just guessing.
Well, you know, it's another one of those things. It's going to be very frustrating because she could be president by the time anybody finds this out, and by then nobody will care.
Yep.
What difference does it make, Brian?
Well, anyway. I've been more sympathetic with her on this particular point than I have been about, you know, the lie about the YouTube video. But if this kind of stuff continues to come to light, that we had guys that were prepared to go over there and try to help, and somebody said, no, you're not going, that'll just be more than I can take.
Right. Well, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
She is a good friend, but I just don't know how to fix this conflict. I wonder if it's time to just walk away. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. In today's disposable society, it sometimes doesn't seem worth the effort to risk confronting a friend. After all, they will only get defensive, and that would ruin the friendship anyway. To avoid losing a friend or making a conflict worse, considering using the peacemaker pause. The A of pause reminds us to affirm the relationship. Use your energy to attack the problem, but affirm the relationship. The Bible says, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as it fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear." If you are at a walk-away point in a friendship, call 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation, or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number is 515-635-5465.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We so appreciate you tuning in and or listening on the podcast. Without you, we wouldn't be doing this. So we really appreciate you, the listener, and we encourage you to go to caffeinatedthoughts.com. Click on over to a button that you see in the sidebar that says, "As Heard on the Radio." Every month we're going to be giving away a giveaway, yeah. If that's redundant,
wow. Feature that we're giving away a giveaway.
Yeah, yeah. So the prize that you could possibly win if you win the drawing is a copy of, this month, anyways, a copy of each of Rosaria Butterfield's books, "The Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert" and "Openness Unhindered." You have to enter the winning word, which is coffee. Which I've obviously not had enough of. And that winning word is what again?
Coffee.
Okay. You cannot win if you don't enter the winning word, because then we think you just didn't listen to us.
I thought you were going to say something like, you can't win if you don't play. No. That's what I was about to hear you say.
No.
You can't play if you don't win.
Okay. moving along.
That's my thoughts.
Yeah.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
This is from Michigan Live. After a burglary suspect barreled through a house, knocking over a tray of cupcakes and other items, police had little trouble tying her, to the crime. Police found her a couple of blocks away, drunk and covered in cake and frosting. This is Alpena, Michigan, apparently. Alpena police responded early Sunday, October 18th, to report of a possible breaking and entering of a house on Lewis Street. The homeowner reported hearing a commotion, then found an unknown woman inside the house. The woman quickly fled. The homeowner reported that a tray of cupcakes and several other items had been knocked down or broken. Alpena police and Michigan State police troopers began looking in the area for the woman. State police spotted her a few blocks from where the break-in occurred. She was described as, quote, highly intoxicated and had cupcake, frosting, and cake all over her torso and legs, unquote.
My goodness.
The woman was taken to the Alpena County Jail on charges of unlawful entry and malicious destruction of property, Alpena police said. Is the malicious destruction of property the destruction of the cupcakes?
I was going to say, that sounds more like that was an accident.
Sounds like she tripped over and then fell into them or something.
She had to. I mean, yeah. Can you imagine when the cops find this lady and she's got frosting all over her, you know, head to toe? They're like, how did this happen? Anyway.
Yeah, she may have thought, oh, cupcakes. Yay, I'm going to land. delicious, yum.
Delicious, yum.
I don't understand. Once again, I really don't understand. Now I realize the poor lady was intoxicated. But we have these stories pretty frequently, and you read these things, and
they're
you're
almost always drunk, it seems like.
Well, okay, but I don't understand, even if you're three sheets to the wind, why would you bust into somebody's house and somehow or other manage to get cupcake icing all over you? I, this stuff,
You can't
I'm
make
wondering
it up,
if she thought it was her house.
Well, I suppose that's
possible.
It would be kind of interesting to see if they reported what, you know, what street she lived on.
Oh, let's not go there.
No, yeah, I mean,
that would not be good if people started looking for that street.
No. That's, yeah.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and we'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
Probably the blame. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.